supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, bad news about blights. Late blight on tomatoes, the impatiens blight that wiped out all those shade-loving flowers last year. Now a basil blight. What can we do about these dread diseases? And what does the word blight mean anyway? We'll tell you all about it when we get to the question of the week. But it was time for a phone call show, cats and kittens, so we're going to take that heaping helping of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Judy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi there, Mike.
Hello, Judy. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I am doing wonderfully today. Thank you for asking. Where is Judy great?
Bluff City, Tennessee.
What can we do for Judy in Tennessee?
Okay, I have a Bosque pear tree, and for the last 2 years, something has eaten every one of them, and I don't know if it's the deer, and I know that the squirrels get up in the tree, but it's not the squirrels that's completely eating all of them, because they take a bite or two out of it and then throw them down. And I don't know, it possibly could be the raccoons, but whatever it is, they are cleaning my tree up from top to bottom, and even on the ground, if there's anything on the ground,
right,
they eat it up. And so I need to know what I can do to deter them from the trees.
Right, and you live in Varmint Central, it sounds like, here.
Oh, I do. We do have a lot.
How tall is this? Go ahead, Judy, I'm sorry.
I haven't seen any bears. that it could be the bears, but I haven't seen any bears around, so I don't think it's them. I really think it's the deer or the raccoons.
Deer, well, bears make a lot of damage whenever they come browsing through, like going for a beehive or a blueberry patch. Do you ever find any deer scat?
Yes, we have.
Okay.
Not actually around the pear tree, but in the garden, the vegetable garden.
The
little piles.
So it sounds like you need some fencing around that garden there, Judy.
Well, we do have fencing, but they jump the fence.
Right. How tall is the fence?
Apparently not tall enough.
Yeah. That's the best answer. You know, Judy, how big is your vegetable garden?
Oh, it's about,
just,
I really
roughly,
don't know how many square feet, but it's a big garden. I mean, we put out lots of vegetables. We have all kinds of vegetables, so it's probably maybe a fourth of an acre.
Okay, that's a big garden. You know, what I would advise you to do for the vegetable garden is there are now very inexpensive electric fences that run off of solar panels. So you point these solar panels towards the sun, and then the electric fence is just a couple of strings of wire, but they are arranged so that they will stop a groundhog down at ground level, or they'll catch a deer across the chest as they push up against it. And the shock is enough to startle them and send them away, but not enough to harm them. And these are sold in kit form, and they come complete with an easy-to-open gate for you to go in and out. And they're much safer than electrical fences that run off of electricity, house electricity. The solar energy keeps them just the right charge to give the animal a deterrent but not hurt them. Now, how tall is your pear tree?
It's tall. I have to get a ladder to climb to the top to get the pears.
Okay.
It's that tall. It's real tall.
And are there other trees around it? If I were a squirrel.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So if I were a squirrel, I could jump into your pear tree.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, see, you're in a world of trouble.
Don't say that.
There's a couple things I can suggest. There are sticky wraps that you could wrap a part of the trunk so that any creature who is coming up from the ground, I think when it comes to pears disappearing completely, it can be raccoons, it can be possums, and it can be squirrels. and I'm sure you have all three. But the squirrels will jump from other trees, but the other ones will generally be crawling along the ground, then they'll climb up the trunk of the tree. So if you install a baffle, you know what I mean, kind of an upside-down funnel,
mm-hmm.
or a big, like, two-foot-wide sticky area, then they can't go up the tree. But we still have the squirrels jumping into the tree from other nearby trees. So one thing I would do is I would go out and buy a motion-activated sprinkler. These are things you hook up to their hose, mm-hmm. and they have a battery in them. And when something breaks the beam, they shoot cold water and in that direction. And they protect my peach trees from squirrels.
Okay.
The first thing I would do is install a baffle. You can buy these at any big farm store, a baffle around the base of the tree, or you mm-hmm. get that that sticky paper, that sticky tape, and wrap it around the trunk of the tree. And then I would, you know, if it's possible over the winter, to thin out some of the trees nearby so that it is a harder jump for the squirrels, you could salvage a lot of pears that way, I think.
Okay. Okay.
All right, Judy?
Okay. I thank you very much for your information.
My pleasure. Good luck. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yes, hello, Mike. This is John Felgenhauer calling from southern Delaware, about 6 miles west of Lewis and about 10 miles north of Rehoboth Beach.
I was just down in the Rehoboth area just recently, and it is one of the hidden seashore treasures of the East Coast.
Well, I tell you. Years ago, my sister says, come on down and check it out. And I did, and I liked it, and I bought a house down here. And my taxes have never been better than down here.
So you're a goodwill ambassador for the state of Delaware,
right,
huh?
I have a garden patch that's about 4 feet wide and about 75 feet long that my son tilled up. And I'm looking for nice, tangy, sweet tomatoes. And I also have some questions about how much lime should I put on.
Why do you think you need lime?
Well, I don't know. I had done a soil test about 3 or 4 years ago, and I sort of thought that maybe it was probably time to put lime on again.
Do you remember what your pH was back then?
No, I don't, but I have a lot of what you would call sand mixed with bog iron, and only about 2 feet of that, and then below that, it's just pure white beach sand.
Oh, okay. That means it's very difficult for your soil to retain nutrients,
right?
But it drains well, which is something that those of us who grow in clay soils can't say.
Oh, I remember that. I came down from near Quakertown, Pennsylvania, and it was nothing but solid clay up there.
Yes, you have experienced the two extremes of
right.
soil types in America.
Right.
So, you know, sand is not going to have, like, a ridiculously definitive pH. I would recommend that what you do is you get a big load of compost, yard waste compost delivered, and spread that over top of your sand. You say your son has already tilled the soil, which I would not have recommended.
You know, he likes to come down and
Men like to till things. It's bad for the soil. It creates weed problems. And your garden, you say, is only 4 feet wide.
Right.
So you don't have to step in the growing area.
Right. And I'm only really wanting to put in, like, about 3 tomato plants.
Okay. And I presume you don't want to wrestle with plants that are going to be 10, 12, 14 feet long.
Preferably not. I have these wire cages that only stick up about 4 or 5 feet to keep the deer and so on from nibbling the plants.
You're going to go to a store and buy your plants?
Yes.
Okay. The first thing I want you to do is get a big load of compost delivered.
Right.
And just shovel it on top of the sand. You don't have to mix it in. It'll get mixed in by weather and time and everything like that. I would not add any lime, just lots of compost to the soil.
Right.
And then you're going to go to a nursery and you're only going to have so many options. What you want to make sure is that you get what are called determinate tomatoes. These are tomatoes that are more well-behaved, that will grow to a certain size and then stop.
Yeah.
And rather than get three of the same kind, I would prefer you look at the days to maturity. It'll have like 55, 60, 75, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to get three different tomatoes that have different days to maturity, because these things tend to come in all at once. But if you have three plants, then you get a nice succession. Make sure when you buy them, make sure that the people understand you want what are called determinant plants that are not rampant growers. It may say patio style. It may say bush style.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, it's been a pleasure for me, and have a good day, and thank you again.
My pleasure, John. You have a good season.
Take care. All right, bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody with a lawn that the best place for your clippings is on the lawn. Removing the clippings starves your lawn of its favorite food. And if you have your turf foolishly treated with herbicides, those clippings must be left on the lawn. Do not put tainted clippings in your compost or out for collection. But don't go looking for all the cool lawn care tips at the A to Z section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fascinating phone calls and the latest news on the bad blights affecting gardeners nationwide. I'm badly blighted Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Blight-Free Garden.
Verpie supports You Bet Your Garden. Verpie can help do the gardening for you with garden-ready plants, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, herbs, and more, delivered at planting time in your region. These and more can be seen online at verpie.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. A lot of people send us emails and call in to the show saying they have a blight on some type of plant. And we always respond, well, we hope you don't, because blight is a very specific thing and it's not something you want to have. We're going to review the status of three bad blights that have been wreaking havoc in gardens this past couple of seasons. We're also going to discuss what that word means. What qualifies a plant disease as a blight? But before that, lots of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Trish, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, hi, Mike. It's great to be on with you.
It's great to have you on with me. Where are you, Trish?
I live in Powhatan Township, New Jersey. It's actually the western part of the state, northwest, and it used to be a Lenni-Lenape area. And so Powhatan talks to the stream that runs between two hills in our area.
Okay, very good, very good. Yeah, where I grew up in Philly was said to be old Lenape land as well.
Yeah, neat.
So what can we do for Trish in the Garden State?
I live in a stone bank barn that's on the side of a hill. So the terrain is hilly as well as flat in areas. And I've got a bad weed problem. There are like three different types of weed. I know one is called chickweed. Another weed is this weed that you touch it and it explodes into all these little seeds.
Right.
And then another one, sort of when you try to pull it out, it's very prickly and sticky.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to get them off the property without spraying. I don't believe in using Roundup.
Good. Now, this may seem like a stupid question, but and you can answer either stupid question. One of them is, why do they have to be gone, or more importantly, what are you going to grow in their place, or where are they growing that you want something else?
Okay. What I've done is I've cleared out this area of invasives in front of my place. I've gotten rid of a lot of that multiflora rose and all kinds of other things in there that are invasive. And so I've got more light coming in, and actually I've got a lot of wildflowers coming up now, in addition to spice bushes and sycamores and black walnut trees. But I've got these weeds there, and I don't know if it's a good thing to leave them there or, you know, should I try to get rid of them in some way?
Well, you know, they are holding soil in place. The
sure.
Chickweed, you know, you see all the little white flowers on the chickweed. The chickweed is a tremendous plant for attracting pollinators and beneficial insects. Those are the kind of tiny flowers that all the good bugs love to go to get pollen and nectar. That's like a place where lace wings and the miniature, almost microscopic parasitic wasps that keep the caterpillar population under control, they all go to those little flowers for pollen and nectar. The weeds that shoot their seeds, they can be annoying, but you can also see that that's a real interesting trick of nature there, that if anything disturbs the plant, it's like popped from guns and it shoots its seeds in all directions. So something is going to have to be there. I find chickweed to be very inoffensive. The seed shooting weeds, they're not attractive. I don't see them doing anything great. What I have done with those is, because they are active so early in the season, you know, it's just very early in the spring, you touch them and they're already shooting their seeds, so they're clearly winter annuals, I go after those with my flame weeder.
Okay, we do that. We do that in some other areas, but we could do that there.
Yeah, and I just torch the head so that the seeds, you know, pop like Rice Krispies. And,
oh, cool.
And then pretty soon the plant diminishes in number. Now, the other plant you're describing, the one that has the little spines on it when you pull it, that could be stinging nettle or it could be thistle.
This isn't thistle. Because I know what that looks like. This is, it sort of gets a little viney and spreads horizontally rather than vertically.
Okay, stinging nettle doesn't do that. Does it have purple flowers?
Well, I haven't seen a flower because, again, this used to be so much woods and vines and invasives. So I really haven't. This is the first year I'm really going to see what it's going to do. I'm sorry, I don't know the name of it, but when you pull it, it's very sticky. It's sticky, too.
Sticky, huh? Yeah, I don't know that one. Or at least I'm failing it. If it were stinging nettle, stinging nettle is a great medicinal plant.
Okay.
There are people who beat themselves with it, believe it or not. And they claim to get arthritis relief, much like people who expose themselves deliberately to bee stings. To get arthritis relief. I like chickweed a lot. I find it to be a very attractive ground cover. So if you need to get rid of it, the secret is to pull it up from soil that's really soaking wet. And there's a whole category of weeds that shoot their seeds. And the answer with them is just spend a season flame weeding their heads so they never be able to send
those.
Oh, I will.
You've made me feel so much better today about what is on my property because I'm just going to just let it be then. I'll get rid of those shooting ones. But one thing I've noticed is I have a lot of honeybees on my property.
Exactly.
And I don't know where they're coming from, but they love it where I live. So I definitely want to encourage that.
If you have actual honeybees, African honeybees, the kind that live in hives, that means somebody has a hive near you. Mm-hmm. Or there's an escaped colony living in a tree somewhere that's thriving. Or you're actually seeing native bees that look like honeybees. There are over 250 species of native bees in your area. So check out native bees online, too. The presence of any kind of bee is the sign of a very healthy habitat.
Oh, terrific. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate spending some time with you today.
Well, thank you. We did as well.
Okay. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you for having me. I have an issue where my home, which is a log cabin, which sits adjacent to woods, and I am inundated with carpenter bees. And, of course, they're putting holes in the side of my home.
Now, John, where are you located?
Outside of Doylestown in a community known as Mechanicsville.
Oh, okay. I know Mechanicsville. And you can tell they're carpenter bees because of the little tool belts and the union cards they carry around when they fly, right?
I think you have a tremendous grasp of the obvious.
Yeah. And these are big bees that are creating galleries in your log home.
Exactly.
What kind of wood are the logs?
I believe they're pine.
Oh, okay. And pine is a soft wood.
Right.
Now, haven't you had to do something to it to make it weather stable?
Yes, it's stained. I mean, the home is approximately 18 to 20 years old.
And it hasn't been stained in 18 to 20 years.
I think you are correct.
And that's why the bees are attacking, John. Carpenter bees are tremendous pollinators, first of all. They are some of the most useful native bees that we have, like their same-sized bumblebees. They do a lot of good work pollinating food and flowers, but they do have a lifestyle in which they will chew into soft wood, pine, cedar, redwood, untreated, unpainted wood, and they will create galleries. Now, interestingly enough, all the researchers I've spoken with say the galleries are not structurally problematic, but of course it becomes emotionally problematic when giant bees are eating your house. You're going to have to do something to make the wood less attractive to them. Now, when I talk to people who have cedar homes or redwood homes, the answer is to coat the area that they're attacking or just give the whole house a coat of almond oil, which is luckily the oil of choice for massage therapists. So almond oil is available in bulk in gallons and 5 gallons, and it is somehow naturally repellent to carpenter bees. And it's also a good oil for wood. So if you brush it onto the side of the house or spray it onto the side of the house, it will help protect your wood, which sounds like it's due for a staining.
Yes, it is.
And repel the bees. But I would think any type of new stain that you would do to the house would repel the bees. They tend not to go after wood that is stained or painted. And if you wanna be like a real mensch for the environment, what you do before you start the process of staining the house or using almond oil is you go to the local lumber yard and get some big pieces of pine, some big blocks of pine, and drill little holes into them, starter holes with a 5/8 inch drill bit, and hang those in the trees in between your house and the woods. And then the carpenter bees will be repelled by the staining process, by the almond oil, but they will use those blocks to nest in. So that achieves a double purpose. You maintain this population of very useful bees. You also give them low-hanging fruit so that they don't go look for areas that may not have been stained properly or uncovered. If they have these giant blocks of pine with little holes already started in the trees, they will use those to build their galleries in, and they will be less interested in your home.
Well, thank you so much for all the help that you give all of us, and have a great day. I will try it.
All right, very good. Good luck, John.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Carmel, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. How are you, Carmel?
I'm doing well. I am trying to keep a vegetable garden growing.
Okay.
In Alabama.
And where did you say you were?
I'm in Midland City, Alabama.
Okay. What part of Alabama is that?
It's better known as Lower Alabama.
Okay. What can we do for Carmel?
I have ants, little fire ants that are trying to take over the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And they started off around it, and now they're coming up into it. And I haven't figured out what the best way to get rid of them without using pesticides.
Now, when you say fire ants, that is a very specific creature. One of the distinctive things about them is they create very large mounds.
Yes.
Okay, so you have red ants that are making mounds.
Yes.
Okay, these creatures are very dangerous. These creatures have a lot of venom. The venom is very toxic, and they are very dangerous to humans, pets, and livestock. Fire ants are attracted like mad to electricity. They're a tremendous problem sometimes in rural areas because they'll get into switching boxes, but they're tremendously attracted to electricity. So I've always wondered, if you were able to run an extension cord out to where their mound was and put one of those bug zappers, the fire ants, I would think, would love to march to their doom into one of these bug zappers. That's something I'd be interested in trying. But there is a mound treatment. Now, the best place to get this information, I'm going to tell you about it, but I also want you to look it up.
Okay.
Texas A&M University. They have done a tremendous amount of research on fire ants, and they have a chemical control called the Texas Two-Step. It's a combination of two kind of toxic agricultural chemicals. But because there was a lot of demand, and we had these guys on the show years ago, also because they're really hip guys, they came up with an organic version.
Okay.
So at Texas A&M, search organic Texas Two-Step. One product is called spinosads, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D. These are naturally occurring organisms that occur in compost piles. That's where they were originally isolated from. And spinosads are available in powdered form, and you pour the powder into the nest, and it gives the ants some kind of a fungal issue. There's also an immediate control that you use to knock down the nest called D-limoline. Really, all it is orange peels. It's essence of orange. And the big brand name for the pesticide that is sold that's made completely from orange peels is Orange Guard. If I remember correctly, and it's been a while since I talked about the two-step, I think you pour a lot of Orange Guard in the mound to get a knockdown, and then you treat the mound with the spinosads, and that wipes out the colony. I'll also tell you, one thing to remember is, like a lot of these nests of venomous insects, there's one queen generally. And the interesting thing about these creatures is they move her around a lot. In the middle of the night, on a cool night, she will be right at the top of the mound. And that's when you can pour the D-limoline, or if you can do it carefully, boiling water. And on a cool night, she's going to be right up next to the surface to try to get warmth. Conversely, during the heat of the day, they'll take the queen down as low as they can to keep her cool, and that's often the safest time to approach the nest. But no matter what you do, be careful. These stings are as bad as those of a yellow jacket.
Yes, I am familiar, unfortunately.
Get a hold of these products. Treat the mounds when you see them. Learn about the life cycles, and you should be able to garden without getting stung. If you do get stung, by the way, I want you to go to a supermarket, and I want you to buy a bottle of Adolph's meat tenderizer. And make sure the active ingredient is papain from papaya fruit. If you get stung, put a wet cloth on the sting, pour some meat tenderizer on the cloth, and hold it against the sting. The venom is all protein. Papaya works to tenderize meat by breaking down proteins. So if you get meat tenderizer with papaya on the sting right away, it denatures the venom, and the sting literally goes away.
Wow, I will have to try that.
Yes, but, you know, there's no protection against being stung by 100 of them, so be super careful,
right.
But do get rid of the mounds. They are a danger to you and your family.
Yes.
All right, Carmel?
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the help, and I will also look for the post-sting remedies.
Very good. All right, good luck to you this summer.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll make my final appearance of the season on Sunday, June 9th at noon and 2 at the 20th Annual Earth Fair in Smithville, New Jersey. It's a great day of music, activities, family, fun. Hey, and me! That's the 20th Annual Earth Fair in Smithville, New Jersey on Sunday, June 9th. Don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be back with more of your fabulous phone calls and the latest news on late blight, impatient blight, and other blights. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Verpi supports You Bet Your Garden. Verpi can help do the gardening for you with garden-ready plants, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, herbs, and more, delivered at planting time in your region. These and more can be seen online at verpi.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. What's up with late blight on tomatoes? Is it still an issue? What about the blight that wiped out impatiens, the new blight that's after basil? And what does the word blight mean anyway? We'll answer all of those questions after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Tim, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Tim. How are you?
I'm fine.
And where is Tim fine?
I am calling from Interlaken, Michigan.
Oh, always nice to hear from our listeners up there. What can we do for you, Tim?
Yeah, we live in a cabin that's pretty well nestled in the woods and have hanging baskets all along the front of our porch. And I haven't been able to find anything to put in those baskets that will flower for very long. We get pretty good dappled sunlight, but never any direct sunlight. So I was hoping you might be able to suggest something that would bloom in the shade.
Yes. Now, the hanging baskets, are they the ones with the coconut shell fiber sides, or are they real baskets, you know, made of plastic or something like that?
They used to be those coconut things, but they dried up so fast, so I got rid of those and just lined them with plastic and then put in planting, you know, potting soil or whatever. I do have slits in the bottom so they drain.
Right. It is that same metal frames, but you put in, like you cut up an old trash bag or something to hold moisture in there.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I can tell you for a fact that annual begonias are a great plant for hanging baskets. They don't need much sun at all. They do well in a lot of conditions. And I have begonias all over the place because I have a lot of shade. Now, it's interesting. I'm going to have less shade this year than we've had in the past because Hurricane Sandy took down a massive old tree that we actually loved, but it Sandy didn't ask us before she took it down. So I'm going to have a lot more sun to play around with. But in my shade garden, the bulk of the plants are annual begonias. You can get them in a wide range of colors. Begonias are a fabulous genus of plants. There are just so many types of begonias that they've had just books written about the entire species. You could also grow what are called tuberous begonias. These are a little bit like dahlias. These are a summer blooming bulb. You would plant the bulb in the potting soil, and then it would produce a very showy flower. The annual begonias, they're, you know, they produce a lot of flowers, but the individual flowers are smaller, normal size for bedding plants. There is nothing normal about the size of a tuberous begonia. It is out of control. It's like orchid-like, like dahlia-like, very showy, a lot of fun. And they're very good at re-blooming. And one of the reasons I like all of the begonias is at the end of the season, and especially in Interlaken, where it's going to get cold fast, you would take that tuber out of your hanging basket, or you would just take the hanging basket inside and just store it over the winter, make sure the tuber is protected from cold, and then you could reuse the same tuber the following year. And what a lot of people don't know is you can do the same thing with your annual begonias, with those bedding plants. If you bring those hanging baskets inside and you either transfer them to planters that can sit in a sunny windowsill or you set something up for them, as long as they don't get frosted, they will live for years and years and you can reuse the same plants. They are a remarkable plant. They can really go either way, but they are considered one of the essential shade-loving flowers. Now, in hanging baskets in the past, I would have told you to look for impatiens, but impatiens are being hit by a terrible nationwide blight. And even if you do see them for sale at a garden center, the instructions are not to buy them. We don't need anything to spread the blight around. Although, if you see similar-looking plants that are called New Guinea impatiens, they do very well in hanging baskets. They're beautiful flowers, and they're not affected by the blight at all.
Yeah, that's great news. I'll try the begonias. I've had good luck with them in the past, so I'll give them a shot.
They are a tremendous plant. They're one of the most useful ornamentals I have in my entire landscape.
Good deal. Well, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
All right, Tim. We appreciate your call. Take care and have a good summer.
You too. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Gwen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks.
Well, thank
you.
I am well, Gwen. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's a little overcast out here today, but other than that, it's quite nice.
And where does Gwen live?
In Bensalem, just north of Philadelphia. Northeast, I guess, of Philadelphia. We're in Bucks County, Lower Bucks County.
All right. What can we do for Gwen and Ben Salem?
Well, my lawn is looking pretty sad, and I wanted to know if it was too late to put down weed control.
Yes, if you're talking about pre-emergent weed control, to control the weeds that sprout in the early spring, like crabgrass. Yes, that window has passed. That material, hopefully corn gluten meal, the natural weed and feed, that needs to be put down when the soil temperature is around 50 to 55 degrees and the forsythia and red buds begin blooming. And all around us, the forsythia are pretty much done for the season. So that means that most of those annual weed seeds have already sprouted. Now, you say your lawn looks bad. How do you normally care for your lawn? Do you cut it? Do you have a service cut it? Do you feed or do anything to it?
No. Years and years ago, I had one of those big commercial places who came and, applied the 5 applications every year. And I stopped that many, many years ago. And since then, I really haven't done very much with the lawn at all. And now I have some zoysia grass that's spreading. There's a lot of clover in it, a lot of dandelions. So it just really needs help.
Well, the clover and dandelions are showing that you haven't fed the lawn. They're the sign.
Okay.
Because it is always great to cancel toxic lawn services, but the lawn still needs to be taken care of. And you don't need weed killers. You just need to make sure that the grass itself is well cared for. Now, who cuts it?
A local high school student who's very responsible and quite a nice young man.
Good. And whose lawnmower does he use?
His own.
Okay. And does he ride on top of it? Does he push it?
He pushes it.
Okay. So the first thing you want to do is next time this kid shows up, you want him to make sure the cutting height of the mower is as high as it can go. You don't want to cut the grass too short. The fact that your zoysia grass is moving in is a sign that your grass is being cut too short. He should try to move the blade up so that there's 3 inches of grass left behind after he cuts it.
Okay.
Now, this is the perfect time to give your lawn a spring feeding. It does need to be fed, and there's no reason not to use corn gluten meal. Go out to a lawn and garden center, an independent garden center, and get corn gluten meal and apply it at the rate of 10 pounds per 1,000 square feet of lawn. It'll give your lawn a natural feeding, and it'll probably prevent some of the new dandelions from taking hold. As you notice, some of the dandelions are turning to puffballs already.
Yes, they're just starting to do that now.
So the corn gluten meal applied now can limit your future dandelion damage. But it's time to put down a good natural feeding soon, before the weather gets too warm. Then you don't want to feed the lawn over the summer. You just want it to be cut at 3 inches, and he does leave the clippings on the lawn, right?
Yes, he does.
Good. And then in the fall, you want to give it a big feeding. If you can hire this kid, have a big load of compost delivered and have him spread the compost on the lawn in late August. That would give you an incredible boost. Your lawn would thrive and the weeds would run away in shame. Otherwise, you want to use corn gluten meal again in the fall or some other natural bagged organic lawn food. But the bottom line, don't try to attack the weeds directly. That's chump change. What you want to do is make sure it's never cut lower than 3 inches and it gets fed in the spring and in the fall, twice a year, spring and fall, never in the summer. And do you water the lawn?
No.
Okay. So you don't water the lawn artificially?
Correct. That's correct.
All right. Don't change that. Just give it a good feeding now, a good feeding in the fall. Cut it at 3 inches. This time next year, you will have many fewer weeds. The year after that, I doubt you'll see any.
Okay. Great. I really appreciate you taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Gwen. You take care and you have a good summer.
You too, Mike. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. An update on tomato and impatiens blight, and just what makes a plant disease a blight anyway. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please read this week's first question.
Sure, Mike. Michael and Myra in Allentown, Pennsylvania write, "Last year our impatiens did very poorly, and we heard there was some problem with either the weather or a blight. So many of our plants died that we don't know if we should try again this year. Is there a known problem, or was it just a bad year?"
Well, to misquote a popular song lyric, it was a very bad year for shade-loving flowers and tomato plants. Yes, an impatiens, quote, blight wiped out huge numbers of the shade-loving flowers last year. They looked like they were getting too much sun one day, the next day they were leafless, and the next day they were gone. Done. Kaputsky. The correct common name for the affliction that took them down is impatiens downy mildew, explains Dr. Margaret Tuttle McGrath, no relation, from the Cornell University Department of Plant Pathology, Long Island Horticultural Research and Extension Center in Riverhead, New York. A different but equally deadly downy mildew has also started attacking basil plants, she adds. Both blights, she explains, seem to have come out of nowhere. There had been a few reports of these pathogens, but nothing really significant. Then suddenly we had widespread late blight on tomatoes one season and devastating impatiens and basil blights the next. Now, late blight on tomatoes is not a downy mildew. It's a pathogen so powerful and notorious it was given a formal name that roughly translates to the destroyer of plants. And I'll add destroyer of people as well. It's the exact same pathogen that led to the starvation of so many of my ancestors during the Irish potato famines of the 1800s. So what exactly qualifies each of these diseases as a blight? What is a blight anyway? A blight is when the plants just get wiped out, explains Dr. Meg, and they get wiped out really fast. The word blight isn't so much a strict horticultural term as it is societal, biblical, a blight upon you. It's a terrible thing that happens to plants fast, and then people suffer. Right now, the only way people can think of to try and stop the impatiens blight is to not plant impatiens for a few years. That's why horticulturalists and reporters like me are urging gardeners to grow different shade-loving flowers for the next few seasons. Things like New Guinea impatiens, which are not affected by the blight. Annual begonias, coleus, and Terrinia, the wishbone plant, an underused and very attractive shade-loving annual.
We also heard from Mike in Green Lane, Pennsylvania, who writes, "Last September, my tomatoes were blighted. Despite growing in raised beds, being supported by nice sturdy cages and fed no chemical fertilizers, the bottom leaves began browning, then the stems, and then the fruits developed bad spots, which spread rapidly. It all happened at a pretty fast clip. The papers and blogs were all abuzz about late blight, so I pulled out the plants and threw them in the trash. I would like to avoid this blight next year. I already plan to rotate my tomatoes to a new bed. Should I also use a bleach solution on the cages to eliminate carryover?"
Please, no bleach. Bleach is incredibly toxic and dangerous. It was used as a weapon of mass destruction in World War I, and it has no place in a nice organic garden. If you feel you must disinfect something, use white vinegar instead. Now, as Dr. Meg has explained on the show the past few seasons, the late blight pathogen, which despite its name can strike very early in the season, does not survive cold winters above ground. So it's not on your soil, your tomato cages, or other surfaces. It does survive underground on infected potato tubers. And Dr. Meg feels strongly that those tubers are tomato enemy number one. So if your tomatoes had blight last year and volunteer potatoes appear in your garden, dig them up carefully and throw them in the trash. And don't plant tomatoes where those potatoes were growing. As in previous years, the disease has already been detected down in Florida, and it'll work its way up the coast, traveling on the wind. It spreads most rapidly when the humidity is high, but temperatures are relatively cool. The pathogen actually goes dormant in really hot weather. It attacks chemical and organic plots equally. Your best protections, explains Dr. Meg, are to grow resistant varieties. Better ones are coming on the market every year, she notes. To check purchased transplants very carefully. Dark stems are a bad sign. And to provide the best possible growing conditions. That means making sure your tomatoes get morning sun, that there's great airflow in and around the plants, and that you water only at the base. Don't wet the leaves, and don't overwater. You can't affect the actual outdoor humidity, she notes, but you can keep your growing area as dry as possible. You can track the spread of the disease as it moves up the coast at usablight.org, and you can learn the symptoms of late blight at Dr. Meg's diagnostic web pages, which we will link up to, as well as her treatment recommendations for organic growers. Well, that sure was some darn depressing information about blasted blights now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, with links to lots more information and our previous articles on tomato and impatiens blight. To read it all over carefully, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to bring me a blight if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Please put the actual subject of your email in that thing that says subject line. And check voiced to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems in our Garden Answers A to Z section, listen to this show, listen to old shows, download this week's podcast, and follow us on Facebook. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been senior WHYY engineer Fred Snyder. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's Internet Illuminati. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at our Facebook page. Our impatiens editor is Al Banks. Our blight-free intern is Jolie Higazi. Basil-loving Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm bad to the blight, Mike McGrath, and I'll see you next week. Can a bride getting married in August grow her own bouquet? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal a professional grower's secrets for successful bridal blooms, plus your fabulous phone calls.